ऐसी मशीन लगाऊंगा इस साइड से आलू घुसेगा उस साइड से सोना निकलेगा।
Everyone, welcome to the Attention Please podcast, now on video. If you like this video, kindly like, share, subscribe. You know what to do. So today we have a special guest. He's Dr. Alok Ray. He has been a professor of economics at Indian Institute of Management, Calcutta, Cornell University, Portland State, University of Pittsburgh, and Monash University in Queen's University, Kingston. But I know him as my father. So I will henceforth not refer to him as Dr. Ray, but just as Baba. And he's going to be the expert. Usually I opine on everything and I usually don't know anything about what I'm opining on. But today, for a change, we will have somebody who knows what he's going to be talking about. And that's economics. And that we'll be talking about the Indian budget, which was presented yesterday. So without any further ado, here's Dr. Alok Ray, or that's the last time I'm going to refer to him by his full name, or Baba. So the first question that I have for you, Baba, is a kind of, a little bit of facetious question, but I still like to ask it because this is what has always puzzled me about the budget, which is what makes people choose things like an umbrella of all the things that you can apply an import duty on. I always thought that this was some kind of like a ministerial favor that somebody has pulled, like some minister, some Babu somewhere on some. I remember when I was young, it was on Kumkum. So there was like the bizarre articles that they choose. So do you have any insight as to how these things get chosen? Why does somebody think that let's pick on umbrella imports of all the things that get imported in India? And then we will come to the real issues.
Well, first of all, let me confess, I have never been inside the government. So I really do not know how it is really done in the corridors of power or all that. So that thing is my guess. Yeah, it is quite possible that some lobbying may have taken place. Also, it is quite possible, you see, customs duties have been raised on so many other things. But I don't know why the finance minister has to mention that particular thing apart from any other thing. That I don't know. I mean, how the mind of a finance minister works. I mean, she could have or could not have mentioned that here, because you see, there are lots of things which happen and which are in these fine prints in this big document, which is actually the budget document. It presents in 1 hour or 1.5 hour, only a little part of it. So there will be maybe 100, 150 items on which taxes have been tinkered here, there. So those things are never actually mentioned in the speech, but somehow this thing was mentioned. I could also hear it. So frankly speaking, I don't know the answer why it has to be mentioned. Even if it is, say, due to some lobbying, then I would rather hide it rather than say it in public that I'm just doing it. So frankly speaking, I don't know.
Yeah. So this will always remain a mystery. I know this is not your domain of expertise, but I just thought, let's start off with that. So let's start off with this old chestnut question, because is this a good budget or is this a bad budget? Because most people don't understand anything until and unless. So either you can answer this as a good budget or bad budget, or you can think of this budget as a student. And how much would you grade out of 10?
Lot depends upon who is looking at it.
Let's not think about Ambani, Adani. Let's think about the general audience for this video, which is people who consider themselves middle class.
Yeah. So not really the so-called poor. Okay. Because the poor have
We will come back to that. But let's start with people who consider themselves middle class.
Okay. All right. So even though middle class is rather nebulous thing, you also know.
Yes.
Almost everybody considers
it. Everybody considers class.
I hope Ambani does not, but perhaps most of the rest of the people do.
Most of the people who consider themselves middle class are actually not middle class, according to the numbers. But that's why I said people who consider themselves to be middle class.
Yeah. But first of all, let me say that there is no changes in personal income taxes or exemptions or the so-called tax brackets, etc. Okay. However, economists should say this, in a sense, is a good thing because you need a stable tax regime and stability of policies. You see, because that is all. Because you see, every year you are always changing income taxes here, there, or all kinds of taxes here, there, and then your policies. That is not good for investors. Investors look at stable regimes. Okay, but another very practical consideration was this: that actually, in the last, I think, some 5-7 years or so, the number of tax income taxpayers has doubled in India for various reasons. I'm not going to the reasons for that, but anyway. So the government does not want some of these people to go out of tax net. Therefore, does not want to increase the exemption limit or anything like that right now. So that is, I think, one of the practical consideration which this. But however, certainly as prices go up and people's so-called money income goes up, even though the real income is remaining the same, you now move to higher income tax bracket automatically. And therefore, you end up paying a higher percentage of your income as taxes. This is good for government and obviously bad for the taxpayers, because even if my real income, suppose, is remaining the same, suppose prices are going up by 10%, money income has gone up by 10%, so my real income remains the same, but I move to a higher income tax bracket. Therefore, I have to pay higher taxes. So that is certainly something bad for the common people.
Okay. But if I may just interrupt you for a second, you said something that the tax collection, the net tax net has increased. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, yes.
So in simple terms, why has this happened? And why could this government do it and not, let's say, previous governments? Because I presume that this has always been an objective of any right-thinking government.
No, actually, what happened was that, you see, in previous regimes, often what used to happen, when you first file your income tax return, lots of questions you had to answer. Why didn't you file it earlier? Why didn't you do this or this? Or what was your income in the past 2-3 years, etc.? So this government at least gave incentive for people that no questions will be asked. You just first enter into the tax net. So that was one of the major incentives. Another thing is this, that actually almost up to 5 lakh, even though the exemption limit is 2.5 lakhs in India for common, I'm not talking about senior citizens, that for them it is a little bit more, but for general public, 2.5. But then under the previous couple of budgets, the provisions have been made that even if you earn up to 5 lakhs, okay, even if you earn up to 5 lakhs, then you will file income tax return, but you don't have to pay any tax, actually. Mm-hmm. Therefore, a lot of people, it provided a lot of incentive to a lot of people who are more or less in that range to enter into the tax net and have good sleep, so to say, so that the income tax people will not pay.
I'm afraid to say this, but would you ascribe some of this at least to demonetization? Not so much the action of demonetization, but the intent of demonetization.
Right. Some people also feared at that time that maybe now that tax people will be able to get hold of you, etc. So it is better to enter the tax net and, I will have it, how to put it anyway. So that income tax people cannot say that you have not filed your tax. Yeah, because I know of some doctors, lawyers, etc., who can hide a lot of their income because when they get their fees, etc., they often get it in cash, etc. But they also declared a little bit more than they did previously because they thought, well, that way the tax people will get happy and will not be will not be after them. So there was a little bit of fear, both incentives and a little bit of fear, which was instilled in the minds of some people. So both considerations played some role.
But what about the impact? Because we've had COVID, right? It's been like a cataclysmic event, and you know, it's definitely impacted the GDP in a negative way. So what steps, if any, have you seen to, you know, essentially roll back the effect of COVID and the lockdowns, or do you think the government hasn't done a great job on this to promote growth, you know, get jobs back? Good things.
Should I focus on this budget, or are you talking about the general policy?
This budget, I mean, obviously we understand that a budget is actually a continuation of monetary policy, right?
Yes.
But you can't look at it in isolation. Again.
Okay. So here let me mention a few things in order to understand this thing, you see. Because often it is being touted by the government spokesman that India has now again become the fastest growing economy in the world, etc. So everybody have to understand a few things here. Actually, in 2020-21 is the worst period of this COVID induced recession, you can say, India's GDP fell by 7.3%, negative growth, 7.3. Okay. Now this year, that is 2021-22, we are having a growth rate of 9% plus. Okay. And then next year, the projection is it will be 8% plus. But even after all this, we are still more or less near the pre-COVID level. I'm not talking about the growth rate, the level of GDP. So you have to remember this. In other words, we're still not out of trouble in that sense. We are still not yet back to the earlier growth path, because growth path was a rising growth path. Actually, there's a level, you have just reached that level, but you have not yet reached that growth trajectory, so to say. Therefore, the government feels that you need still stimulus. That's why this government, again, in this year's budget, is running a fiscal deficit which is much above what is considered generally prudent. Okay? Because still it is being believed that you need a booster dose, so to say, for the economy. Now, how does the booster dose come about? I'll talk about it if you want to.
Sure, absolutely. So what is the booster dose for the economy?
Yeah, exactly. Here, the main thing is this, that the private consumption expenditure is actually stagnant, or in some cases have a bit fallen during this COVID period. Consumption expenditure. Okay? There are several components of expenditure which actually make up the GDP, right? But another important thing is private investment expenditure. So there's a lot of excess capacity in many industries. So there is no need to add to capacity. Therefore, there's no incentive for private investment. Therefore, government has to step in. Okay. So government will have to spend. Now, where would government spend? Here, the focus is on what is called the government infrastructure investment here. So this budget actually puts a lot of emphasis on infrastructure development, the so-called capital expenditure on infrastructure. Now, why it is good? Actually, there are two sides to it. One is the demand side and there is a supply side.
Okay, can I just interrupt you? What is infrastructure? Yes. Does it mean bridges and roads?
Yes. It's roads, bridges, airports, ports, irrigation projects, those kinds of things. Long-lived capital assets for the nation, so to say. The railways, everything.
And there's obviously an analogy between, I mean, the similarity between what Biden is doing in the US.
Yes, exactly. But in Biden's case, also that the US infrastructure also has in a very bad shape kind of thing. I mean, that bridges are collapsing, etc.
He went to promote the bill and a bridge collapsed.
Yes, and it collapsed in Pittsburgh. Because I was in Pittsburgh, so I can even remember that bridge anyway. But here it is more not so much to repair this thing, but to bring in new infrastructure. And now, as I said, it's got two sides. One, this will immediately create demand to the extent government spends money on building roads, etc. So money will be, jobs will be created. For example, when a road is constructed, immediately there will be demand for steel, cement, and labor. So there will be lots of income will be generated, jobs will be generated. Those people will have income. They will be spent it on other goods. This is a multiplier.
I would guess real estate prices would increase, right? If there are more roads, places that were hitherto perhaps difficult to get better, to, better, become easier to get.
If there is better connectivity towards to the cities, to the markets, etc. So that also will have some positive effects on investment, etc. In other words, it is said that, but first, there will be demand boosting, okay? Jobs will be created, because job creation is a very important thing, because unemployment during this COVID period actually, unemployment data is always a bit fuzzy, you can say, particularly in India. But anyway, but still, unemployment rate was reached at a highest level in some 50 years or so, according to CMIE data. However, things have gradually improved after the lockdowns have been eased, etc. But anyway, but still, unemployment situation is pretty bad. And another thing, what has happened, maybe I should mention here, that even if total production may not have fallen, actually the profits, stock markets, all those things are up. But something has happened. You see, production has shifted from small unorganized firms to more organized firms. Because organized firms, etc., or rather organized firms, have much better, robust supply chain than the than these unorganized small firms, etc.
So perhaps that explains why, let's say, Amazon made bumper profits. It was not just because people were buying things from home. It was not just Amazon. Many companies had like an amazing last 2 years.
Yeah. Instead of buying from local markets, now you're buying online from Amazon. So Amazon is prospering. Similarly, many of the IT companies, pharmaceutical companies, they really prospered during this COVID time, because there's more work from home and so many other things, and there was a demand for vaccinations, medicines.
But what has the government done in this budget? Let's come back to the budget. So what has the government done, good or bad?
Yes. Yeah. So as I said, it is the infrastructure. So one part is that it will create demand. Another thing is that this will also have a supply side effect over longer run, because if you have better infrastructure, better roads, ports, airports, railways, etc., then that means that more private investment will also come in later. And not only that, because of this multiplier effect, the demand will increase for, say, consumer goods, for bicycles, two-wheelers or whatever, and even toothpaste, soaps, and so many other things. So there'll be better capacity utilization for such products also.
Okay.
Like, say, Hindustan Lever or whatever, the kinds of things that they sell, as demand for, and even two-wheelers. So greater demand for that, better capacity utilization, hence more need for adding to capacity. So there'll be more private investment also. But these things will take time. But still,
hold on. Let me interrupt you again here, because right now my concern is you're saying that everything is good. But Kejriwal, Mamata Banerjee and Subramaniam Swamy have all said this is a terrible budget. And how can all of them be wrong?
Well, you see, I do not know about Subramaniam Swamy, but Subramaniam Swamy sometime back.
I'm joking. I'm trying to get you to say something bad. Because otherwise you'll sound like BJP, and I know you wouldn't like that. So what terrible thing has happened?
But you know, these reactions are about predictable lines. You don't have to hear anything. Even before that, you know what Mamata Banerjee said. Those are all very standard things. And then government people will say this is pro-poor and all that.
But I'm trying to get you to say, because right now, for the last 15, 20 minutes, it sounds as if the budget was like the best it could have been.
Yeah, in theory, let's say, sounds very good. And ask any economist who is not, or should I say, who's not very biased in that sense.
Whose name isn't Subramaniam Swamy, basically. Go on.
No, yes. Subramaniam Swamy, I'll not consider as economist in this particular context when he says this. You know, he has lots of grudges against this government, so whatever this government does,
of course.
He doesn't know, because he wanted to be the finance minister. You know all those things.
Yeah, we all know that. I'm just bringing him just to make this a little light, that's all.
All right. But generally speaking, even among economists, there will be some with a left of center economist all the time will say nothing has been done for the poor, etc. But generally speaking, I've been following, let's say, lots of articles that have been written here and there on the budget in the last couple of days. But most people think that, yes, the thrust is the right thrust. Yes, this is where the government should focus. Now, the major problem is the implementation problem, which has always been there. Because, you see, even if you announce so many good projects, etc., there are lots of problems in getting this implemented on the ground, because of the land acquisition is a big problem, clearance is a big problem, then there will be all opposition, then there will be fights between center and the states regarding the turfs. They're saying that you are intruding into our turfs. I mean, so all those issues are there at all opposition political parties. They will be opposing the same policies which they supported while they were in power. I mean, this is true about both BJP, Congress, everybody does the same thing. So that is a problem of our type democracy. So given all those implementation issues, yeah, this is the best that could have been done. And I think the government has ticked all the right boxes, so to say. So as far as the theory is concerned, yes, this is a good idea.
I have a question. So yeah, as a non-economist, but who likes to read about economics without understanding much, I often hear this word that there is a need for structural reforms. I've heard this buzzword since 1990s, and somehow it never happens. And usually people say that the best time to have structural reforms is kind of in the middle of the election season, when there isn't an election year next year. So do you think this government has kind of missed the bus in terms of not making any major structural changes? Or do you think that's just a buzzword? There is really no need for structural reforms. It's all right, pretty much.
Well, first of all, let me tell you that election time is never over in India.
No, I mean, the central election, like the one that they
really care. But you see, not that. That is certainly not the case. They do care for elections in UP. They do care for elections in Punjab or whatever. So state elections are also very, very important.
That's true.
So that is why there is always a problem that election is always around the corner somewhere. But still, actually, this is, I think most of the critics have also agreed on. I mean, I was listening to the TV discussion, the so-called so many experts, politicians, that generally said that many people expected this would be a populist budget because of these UP elections, Punjab elections, etc., appeasing farmers. But that is not what has been done here, at least openly. You cannot consider this to be a populist budget in sense. There are no freebies, so to say, new freebies, I should say. Freebies are always there, but no freebies have been actually announced. So that is a pleasant surprise.
A lot of economists say that the government should be doling out freebies. There should be direct cash transfer. This is what progressive economists say should be done.
No, but here again, this government in this budget is saying that no, we are not going to the root of, say, giving money in the form of doles. Rather, there will be meaningful jobs, there will be construction activities, etc., which will actually put money in the hands of the people, but in return for jobs, meaningful jobs, and then there will be multiplier effect, and there will be boost, the economy will be boosted, etc. But not through doles, but through meaningful job creation. That is the idea.
And so, again, summing up, you think that this is pretty much, I mean, there's always room for improvement in anything, but pretty much this is as good as it can be could have been done.
Pretty much, I would say that the general consensus of economists should be pretty much as, yes, this is what was needed. Now, how much, how exactly, the details, obviously, economists, anybody can differ with other people, but by and large, the thrust is the right way, most economists really. Yeah, there is one more thing which I should mention. That is also an ongoing thing, that this government also is also trying for what they are called that Atmanirbhar Bharat, whatever. Okay. So there are two planks on the basis of which this is being built. One, they are restricting imports. Import duties are being raised for many items gradually. Some of the so-called economists, some of the economists who actually were even were initially even advisors of this government, they are not quite happy about this part, the India going for protectionism and all that. However, this government is giving it a Swadeshi, push or whatever. They're calling it Atmanirbhar Bharat. So they are restricting imports, raising customs duties on various kinds of imports, and
like umbrellas.
No, not umbrellas. so many electronic stuffs and so many other things, maybe including, I mean, including umbrellas. They say most of the umbrellas are made in China, so they want to restrict imports from China because we run a huge trade deficit with China. This is also part of this, but not so much that. It's the consumer electronics, IT hardware, and so many other things. These cell phones, and then what do you call it?
So many components
which go to the cell phones. I mean, so all these things, the imports are being restricted. And not only that, the government is giving what is called the PLI scheme, production linked incentive, which is basically nothing but another name for subsidies. So government is giving subsidies to producers in some specific lines, particularly in electronics. Electronics is one major thrust area, green energy, and so many other areas, right? That you will get subsidies and imports will be restricted. So you will have a bigger domestic market, and then that will also induce some of the foreign players, say, like the Chinese cell phone producers. They are now coming here and producing here rather than exporting their products. Okay, so that is also another thrust of this government, which will create jobs here, incomes here, and also eventually we'll be able to export, etc. So that's that. So these are the two major things. One is that the infrastructure, spending on infrastructure. Another, restrict imports, give more incentive to local production in certain very specific thrust areas.
One final thing that I wanted to conclude with, because I'm desperately trying to get you to critique this budget, is that one of the common criticisms that's usually flung at this government is that it doesn't spend enough for education and healthcare.
Yes. Right. No. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure Dr. Amartya Sen would be first in line to say that. So how do you think that government has done? I'm not just saying with respect to this budget. I mean, it's a continuation of their fiscal policy. So
generally, again, most economists think that this government or any government should allocate a much greater percentage of funds to education and health, because these are the very basic, needs of the general population. And generally, our public health infrastructure is in very bad shape. Okay. That's why, and also the education system, that's why even relatively less affluent people, if they can afford to, even if they're taking loans, they go to private hospitals and they're going to the so-called English medium private schools, etc. So, but that was not used to be the case when we were students, so to say. So, as you know, you will not perhaps know, but my generation would know, some of the best schools were that type of government schools, like the Baligarh government school used to be the best school in Bengal. Right.
For those of you who don't know, Baligarh government was the school that Rahul Dev Barman went to. So
yeah, Rahul Dev Barman, Jyoti Basu, Siddhartha Shankar Roy, Satyajit Ray, and so many. So this was
a government school, but it was basically the best school in Calcutta then.
Yeah. But certainly nowadays
I was young, that was not the case anymore.
Yeah, sure. So things have deteriorated over a long time. I'm not saying that during BJP time. So this is a long-term trend. And therefore, many people think that, yes, we should spend much more on improving the public education and public health system. So that's a general criticism which has been made all along by many economists, not simply by Amartya Sen. And particularly, since you're talking about the health thing here, the expenditure on health has actually, the allocation has gone down quite significantly in this budget. I mean, that's why I was again hearing some discussion in these things from even so-called health experts here, not so much economists, but doctors. And there was a question mark. Well, the government's basic argument is like this, that 70% of the adult population has been double vaccinated. Therefore, this year and next year, we need to spend much less on vaccinations. But then it was also pointed out, but how about, first of all, there's another 30%, but then the booster dose is now needed for even the 70% of the population
And to be honest, this is a new disease, right? So it's not that everything else just went away, dengue and everybody, they just...
Exactly. They're all there. Exactly. So all those things are there. New variant may come in, so maybe the old vaccine in any case will be ineffective. So again, we'll have to bring. Therefore, we should make provisions for more funds for vaccination and under public health, etc. So that has been more or less a general criticism coming from many of the doctors that came on this TV panels, etc. So that has been the general.
I think this is the last thing, but we talked about the middle class and we talked about like make in India, but what about the poor? Many people will say that the BJP government is anti-poor. I mean, that's really the biggest criticism. I wouldn't say that our BJP is economically right. I mean, they're socially and religiously right, but they're economically, I think they're middle or socialist. But even then, the principal criticism is that they always favor big business, unlike Congress, which favors poor. So what is the outlook on policies which are geared towards poverty alleviation?
But you see, as far as the so-called welfareism is concerned, there is no difference between this BJP government and the earlier Congress or UPA or whatever. This is a fact. I mean, whatever the critics might say, this government basically has followed exactly the same kind of schemes, introduced any more schemes, and then you have some of the names of the schemes have changed. I will call it PM Kishan or whatever. In Mamata Banerjee, you'll call it some different name. Yes. But
Mamata Banerjee will rebrand it as something else.
Yeah, something else, whatever. And then you have those health insurance scheme. Here, Mamata Banerjee calls it a different name. Modi calls it under a different name. And then Mamata's picture will be here. Modi's picture will be there. So basically, it is exactly the same model which has been followed by all the state governments and all the central governments and union governments that have come to power. So I do not see much difference in this so-called welfareism thing, except that allocation may come and whenever. Okay, again, the allocation on this rural employment scheme, the so-called 100-day program, the MG, Manrega, etc. National Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme, that has less has been allocated here, and then left of center people are
because it's in Mahatma Gandhi's name.
Yeah, Mahatma Gandhi's name, whatever it is. But as Jagdish Bhagwati once said, there is only one scheme in the name of the real Gandhi. That is this one. Many of the other schemes are not in the name of real Gandhi. They are different Gandhi, Rajiv Gandhi. But anyway, whatever it is. But the point is this, even though allocations have come down, food and fertilizer subsidy allocation has come down, but here the government's logic is something like this, that the worst of the COVID epidemic part is over. Economy is recovering. So there is that. So people are now going back to their earlier jobs, etc. Even in rural areas, the migrant workers are going back to jobs. Therefore, there will be less need for 100-day work. There is less need for free food. And that is why less have been allocated. However, if need arises, if things change, we will spend more. That even the finance minister said, that if this is an evolving situation, so we make certain allocations on the basis of certain kind of assumptions. If the assumptions change, then yes, allocations also change. That is why often there's a big difference between what is called BE, budgetary estimate, and RE, revised estimate at the end of the budget period.
Okay. So thanks now, a lot.
And regarding this crypto tax, if you want to ask me.
So I didn't ask about the crypto tax because you and I had a conversation before this for many hours on the crypto tax. I didn't want to get into that crypto tax here.
But now that I have done a little bit of reading and quite a few things have been written in the newspapers, I said, now I'm in a better position to understand what the government is doing. Okay.
So what is the government doing? Say something about the crypto tax.
Yeah, exactly. So, you see, basically, RBI is still dead against allowing cryptocurrencies.
Sure. Okay? I mean, it makes sense. Why would anybody allow something which is a challenge to their authority? They would.
Yeah. And not only that, they think that then the monetary policy authority will be totally diluted. We will lose control over this. So, RBI, even now, even after this imposition of this so-called 30% tax on income from transfer of crypto assets, etc., whatever, RBI, therefore, the government is very careful to point out that this does not mean that the legitimacy has been established. Today, I read a long interview with the ET, etc., from the tax people. They are saying that given that people are making money, even if it is legitimate, illegitimate, we will tax them. We are not saying it is legitimate yet. That the government will have to decide, and government still has not decided on that. Okay. And however, government has decided one thing.
But hold on. Government is, how can the government tax illegitimate activity? Either it's a legal activity or it's an illegal activity. And tax illegal activity, right? There's a contradiction in terms here.
I also thought so, but these income tax people, they're saying that no, it can't be. Even if you are doing some illegal smuggling activities, if I come catch you, and then if there is a tax provision that you have made some money, etc., I can tax you, even if it is an illegitimate. So even illegitimate activities...
I thought you would fine and confiscate the entire illegal. I don't think you would tax like 30% of something, which is like, if I'm caught smuggling gold, they won't take 30% of it. They'll take it all.
Anyway, that is the position that is taken by some tax people. I don't know the legal position. Anyway,
If I may interrupt here, I think my take on this is, I would not put it like this. I think what the main issue is that it is not legal tender. What they're trying to say is that you cannot legally buy anything with crypto. I cannot suddenly start an online website in India which says I accept payment in crypto. That is illegal. But the investment is making money on it. The capital gains is neither legal nor illegal. It's a capital gains, and so they can tax. That is my interpretation.
Definitely. They have not yet allowed as so-called money, so to say, to buy things. But they are allowing
it as legal tender. Yes, you can't.
Yeah, but this is just another asset class, so to say.
Yes.
Which they listen. Not only that, I was just reading this long interview, which they said that some people were already declaring that they have made certain amount of income. They were paying taxes, but some people are not declaring, they are not paying taxes. And some people are declaring it as, or using it as capital gain. Some people are using under different heads. Now we want to make an uniform kind of thing. So no, everything will be treated as income and you will have to pay the tax at the highest rate of 30%. And if you hide, this is an offense, you'll be prosecuted. So, and not only that, from next year's income tax, there will be a separate column where you'll have to enter the amount of now. Whether you can do it, is feasible, etc., that's a different thing. But again, let me point out that immediately after this, after the budget, today's ET was showing that lot of people, particularly business people, etc., they are now interested in investing in cryptos. Now they think that more or less this has been legitimized and we will pay tax, we will invest just like we invest in other things, and for diversification of our asset portfolio we'll also have this kind of thing. So there's a lot more interest in now cryptos, investment in cryptos after this announcement, and all these people will go through legal route. Now again, you might say that they might declare only X percent of what they're doing, I don't know, but if they are going through exchanges, I think they will have to declare and all that. And most of these people, generally people, you see, the small people here and there, they might avoid the exchange. But generally, the people who have other kinds of reputations to protect and who are afraid of income tax rates, etc., they will take the safe route, go through exchange, declare and all.
So to paraphrase, the point you're now making is that as long as there was no regulation on it, it was not even mentioned anywhere. There was always the risk that if they found crypto, they could take it all. Now, at least they're saying that owning crypto technically is not illegal. Using it to buy something is, but not owning it.
Yes.
If you own it, you declare it and you pay tax on it.
Pay tax, you're fine. You're fine. But
so it gives you some amount of assurance that the government is not just going to knock on your door and take your laptop and just leave and say, let's see what we have here. So that I get. So in that case, from that perspective, yes. But of course, it has been taxed like a vice tax, right? A 30% tax is
essentially
the equivalent to one cigarettes.
Exactly. Most probably that is what is going to happen. That this is some kind of now cash cow for the government. Okay. 30% tax from another source of revenue. Good thing. I mean, why not do it? Even if, but possibly, yeah, all those restrictions on not using it as legal tender, those things will continue.
Yes.
Because
if that happens, then yes, there's a direct challenge to the Reserve Bank of India at that point of time.
And not only that they're saying that all kinds of black money, etc., will also be invested there. But if you have declared and all that, then you are safe. Otherwise, if I can catch you later, then you'll be prosecuted. So this is roughly the situation right now, as far as I can understand. Actually, yeah. But one more thing that I should mention here, that government's tax revenue position is now much better. Because often the question is, where did money come from? You are saying that you will spend so much on CapEx, infrastructure, etc. Where did you get the money? The government's revenue position is much better now, because the GST collection is at the highest level since its inception. Now, you can ask me why it is happening.
But see, I was told, hold on, Baba. I was told by wise economists that GST is a total failure. How can this be happening? I'm so shocked.
No. There were lots of teething issues. There were initially lots of implementation issues, but many of these things have been gradually sorted out. And now GST collection is at the highest level since its inception. Okay, this is one thing. And then as the economy is now growing and there is this recovery, automatically tax revenue goes up. Another thing that I mentioned, that a lot of production has shifted from unorganized sector to organized sector. The moment it goes from unorganized sector to organized sector, you see, a lot more profits come under the tax net immediately. So profits are going up, more tax collection from corporate profit taxes. Not only that, you see, small firms, often they are outside even of the GST net by various ways. But when the same production is taking place under the organized sector, there is paper trail and all that. Therefore, it is easier to keep track of these things. And that is also another reason why GST, another thing. However, some economists would say that that means less tax structure is becoming less progressive, because more and more tax revenue is coming from GST, you see. But everybody has to pay the
consumption tax, essentially.
Which is a consumption tax. And the poor person also has to pay the tax at the same rate as the rich person, unlike income tax. So that says progressivity of the tax system is going down. Okay.
And you're paying the same rate. Everybody, the poor person, pays the exact same.
Yes, pays the same thing. Even though, yeah, because when he or she buys, let us say, a bar of soap, or buys some medicine, he has to pay the GST, right? So this is also a myth that poor people don't pay taxes. Often many people say, we only the middle class pay taxes. Poor people only get the subsidies. But that is not true. Poor people also, when they buy most of these branded things in this from the market, they pay GST and various other kinds of taxes, excise taxes and all that. Okay. Now one more thing that I should mention is about the disinvestment process. That is another, because the Air India is often being projected, this is a big success story, right? Which is true, because many people thought that no government will ever be able to find a buyer for Air India. Even though government has absorbed some of the debt, etc., but whatever it is, at least this is a very good thing.
But with Air India, I always felt that the problem was the government actually was never, at least this is my opinion, was never serious in selling, it also, because it's a cash cow for them. It's like the politician's private transportation service for them and their family.
Agreed. So, but whatever it is that, however, regarding every year, government gives a target about so much money will be raised by so-called disinvestment or privatization, whatever you call it. But you'll be surprised to hear that this, there's a 90% shortfall in achieving this target. And some people are saying that if that some heads should have rolled. I mean, whoever is in charge of this, because somebody scores 10 out of 100, then he should lose his job. But whatever it is, I mean, so as far as the disinvestment revenue, so-called, is concerned, there has been a miserable failure. So, however, there is one thing which the government nowadays gets a lot of money from, that is by auctioning the so-called spectrum. And another thing is now 5G spectrum. Again, the government will get a lot of money by leasing or selling, whatever you call it, this 5G spectrum.
Let's not go back to what happened when 3G.
Nowadays, it is much more difficult because of the Supreme Court rulings, etc. This, whatever Raja did, nobody can now do this. First come, first serve, but this cannot fast. It will have to be through open tender and all those things. So now many of the sources of corruption have been removed by court order, so to say, not so much by politicians themselves, but have been forced to do it nowadays. Okay.
So is there anything else that you wanted to say, or should we?
The only other thing that I would like to say again is this, that as I said, in theory, whatever has been announced sounds very, very good, but always implementation is the big, or the is the Achilles heel in India, because our bureaucracy is slow moving. There are lots of litigations, courts are saddled with cases which don't get resolved over decades, etc. So, and then land acquisition issues and so many other things. That's why even if you announce so many other projects, it takes an inordinate amount of time to get this actually implemented. And therefore, even if you make certain kind of announcements, the effects on the ground take a lot of time to get reflected, so to say, in terms of income, jobs, etc. So whatever has been announced in this budget.
That, Baba, is a critique that you can make on any true democratic country, right? It's the exact same thing people say in the US, that no matter what fiscal policy is decided by Washington, D.C., ultimately it's the state politics, local politics, city politics, and that nothing actually ends up happening. In a place like China, the Politburo can say something, yes, and if you don't do it, they'll take a gun to your head and shoot you dead. So it happens, and it happens fast, right? In a democracy, it just can't.
So this is a disadvantage which is so-called parliamentary democracies or congressional democracies suffer vis-a-vis so-called people's democracy.
Yes, when you have checks and balances, right? You have courts, you have the police, everybody works under
courts,
a different boss.
Courts are okay, but if courts could resolve cases, say within 1 or 2 years, then it would be okay. But in India, courts, cases go on dragging for decades.
Yes.
So those are the kinds of issues which are the big problem. Unlike perhaps in US, at least that the part of the court cases will be resolved within 2-3 years.
Okay. If that's it, then I'll conclude. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Look forward to having you in the future. And thank you everybody for listening. And I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.